TapTapC, which is another really cool app that actually takes a picture and tells you what it's looking at. Really cool. I'm not going to have time to talk about all the cool apps, but there's some really cool apps out there. Access, you're right. Yep, Access Note is in there. iBlink Radio. How many of you know about iBlink Radio? iBlink Radio is wonderful. Flexi is great. And Flexi is now free. I bought Flexi, and the only thing that makes me feel a little bit better is that I probably supported them and helped them to develop it. Because I paid $15 for Flexi, now they're giving it away. But that's okay. So probably all of you have favorites and ones that you really like, and those are all in that folder. I have an OTR folder, Old Time Radio. It's got three apps in there that are Old Time Radio apps, because I like Old Time Radio. I use it for mail. I love reading. When I'm on Access, I can read my email because I get behind on my email. I do not have time to sit and read 500 messages that say, I agree.
What, you're normal?
So I can quickly go through and delete the ones I don't want and, kind of get it down to what I need to look at. The rotor, let me just talk briefly about the rotor. The rotor is part of, well, there are a couple of rotors, actually. The rotor is part of VoiceOver, and it's like a circular motion with your fingers. It's kind of hard to describe. It's like, well, you can rotate your fingers on the screen, or you can rotate the phone. They both work, but it allows you to change, depending on what you have on the rotor, it allows you to change how Safari navigates a page. You can go by headings, links, visited links, buttons, just like JAWS. But in order to get those different things, you have to rotate this. Basically, yes. And I had a lot of trouble. I had to really get it in my head. This is how you do this. Because sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. For some reason, my phone had some weird language on the rotor. I don't know what it was, like Swahili or something. And every so often, my phone would start babbling in a language that I didn't recognize. Because I had flicked down, and the rotor happened to be on language. And it was like, oh my God, now what do I do? Well, I finally figured out that I could go in. You can customize what you want to have on that rotor within voice settings. You can actually change the stuff that you want to have there so that you can just tell it, I don't want to see buttons. I don't want to see headings. I want to see lines, words. It will spell for you if you're reading, an email and you're not sure what the word was. It will spell for you. It can do all kinds of things. I also want to mention the 5. I'm sorry. The 4S, I think, does most of that. I apologize for not being clear about that. I started with a 4S. I quickly discovered that buying the 16-gig 4S was not the right decision for me because I needed more space. So I traded up to a 5 and got a 32-gig 5. In January, I bought an iPad mini. I love my iPad mini, and I'll tell you why. My husband has a full-size iPad. My husband is sighted. It's too much real estate for me. The gestures are too different for me to be able to effectively navigate the screen. The iPad mini is much more like the phone. Now, some of you might ask, why did I buy an iPad mini if I could do most of what I do on my phone? The battery life is better. I like to read books with the Bookshare app. Do any of you use Read2Go? Yeah, I really like Read2Go. It's got great speech. The battery life is better. I hope to be able to do word processing and stuff eventually. I have Pages, but I'm still kind of trying to figure out how to use it. They're making it more accessible. Pages is a word processing app similar to Word. And I thought, I don't want to use my phone for all this other kind of thing. I'd rather use my phone for more phone-related things like the calendar and stuff. So I did purchase the Mini. It's really been an amazingly liberating experience. NFB Newsline, how many of you use Newsline? Yeah. Airs LA is another good one. I'm trying to think. There's one that I was going to mention, but it left me, which often happens as I get older. But they're just some really good apps, and a lot of them are free, or they cost 99 cents. The most I paid for an app was Read2Go, which was $20, and it's more than worth it. I really have used it and used it and used it. I bought AccessNote, haven't played with it too much, but it looks really good. I have a Bluetooth speaker, but I don't know, is there a way we can hook this up so they can hear anything?
I don't think we have Bluetooth in here.
Should I try using the speaker? Yeah, I can try that. Let's see.
And the one thing, too, I was going to say about the iPad, too, is that it's faster than your phone, right?
It is faster.
Yeah.
Yep.
More
yes, it is. There's quite a difference, even with the iPhone 5. Okay, where's my... Oh, here it is. How much time do I have? I don't want to take more than my allotted share. Okay. Okay, what I'm doing is I have a Bluetooth speaker. This particular speaker was a gift to me. It's upside down. No wonder it won't work. Was a gift to me for my birthday recently. It came from Radio Shack. I don't know exactly how much it cost. It's called an Avio, and I really like it. It's really nice. If any of you've looked at the speaker that they're selling, who is it? Speed Dots is selling. This one is about a third bigger. It's a little bit bigger than the Speed Dots. It's more rectangular. Theirs is more square. This one is longer. It's really nice. It pairs very easily. There's no code. You know how a lot of times you have to enter some kind of a code when you pair a device? This one just pairs. It's very simple to use. It's very blind friendly. I've paired it with several things, including my BookSense XT. And it pairs beautifully. So I really recommend. I also have a Radio Shack keyboard that I bought. It's called, oh boy, Verbatim. And it's folding. It comes with a really nice case. I'll show any of you that want to see it. And I'm not recommending Radio Shack, but I really am happy with the Verbatim keyboard that I bought. The only thing with that keyboard is you can pair it with more than one device, but it will only work. I paired it with my pad. Used it for a while with that, then paired it with my phone, and it wouldn't work with my iPad anymore. So I think it's probably dedicated. It only really supports one thing at a time.
That's pretty normal with keyboards.
Okay, well, that was a new one on me. I didn't know that. And so I just bought one of those little baby keyboards that Speed Dots has to use with my phone. So I'm going to see how that works for me. But I really like this speaker. It's really nice. Let me turn it on. Let's see what we can do here. I'm not getting it. Oh, there we go. Okay. Let me see. Videos. Okay. I'm sorry. I know this is making all kinds of noise here. Okay.
Music. Music folder. Five apps.
Can you guys hear that?
Sort of.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
This is one thing you can do, and I tend to use my speech pretty fast, but this is something you can do on the rotor. You make the rotor gesture, and then I just do a...
Music folder.
Wait a minute. Sorry. I just do a one-finger flick down.
65%, 60%, 55%, 50%. 45%,
40%, 35%. And there's your speech rate change. Okay, I'm going to do a couple of rotor gestures. So I don't know, I'm not connected to the internet in here, so I'm not going to do a lot with the internet with everybody's permission, because I don't know. I've had some problems here connecting to the internet. I was able to get on in the lobby yesterday. Well, I think in here it may be free, but I'm not really sure, and I don't want to get charged. So I'm going to do my rotor gesture. I use two fingers, and I kind of make a circular motion on the screen.
Volume.
And it makes a little noise. It makes a little, it's hard to define the noise, but it makes a little noise like it's rotating, like something's turning. Like a
Lifestyle containers.
I'm not sure what containers are. This is something that's on the iPad. Maybe somebody else can speak to that because I don't know. It's not on the phone, and I'm not exactly sure what that relates to. But
messages. Safari.
Okay, wait a minute. Oh, there's got to be a better way here. Okay.
Newsstand folder. Zip headings.
Okay, I just rotate. Can you guys hear the? Can you guys hear the computer? Okay. Okay, the speaker's as close to the mic as I dare, because I'm afraid we'll get feedback otherwise.
Language.
Okay, there's the language. Now, once I'm on language, if I flick, what I have right now is the Serena, the Australian. These are very similar to the JAWS voices. If any of you use the Real Speak, this is the same. It's not vocalized. Well, I guess it is vocalizer. I get confused because it says Real Speak in the, but I have three voices on my rotor. So right now I have Serena, which is Australia. If I do a one finger flick up,
calendar.
Whoops, no, it didn't work. That didn't work.
Characters, language.
British English.
There's Daniel. He wasn't awake yet. Had to wait for Daniel. Okay, so there's Daniel. And if I flick up again,
U.S. English.
There's good old Samantha. We all know Samantha. So Samantha is there. She's the default voice. But you can go into your rotor and switch and put just the voices that you want on that rotor. Okay? Now I'm going to do another rotation.
Characters.
Okay, if it's on characters, so it would read by, if I flick up or down in an email or something, it will read it by character. So say I made a mistake and I want to go back and fix it. I can do that.
Music folder.
Whoops.
Find that word. Music folder. Speech rate.
Okay, and I'm back to speech rate. But I can also read by words.
Words.
And if I do the gesture the other way, I'm gesturing clockwise. But if I go counterclockwise, it goes backwards. So say I did it too fast and I missed words, it'll go back to words. I'm going to show you a couple of the apps. Unfortunately, I think most of these require internet. But if I start at the top of the screen.
iPad. Status bar item.
Okay, it says iPad. And then I'm going to do a one finger flick to the right.
10:47 a.m.
There's my clock.
Orientation locked.
Okay, what that means is I have my screen locked. The iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, if you turn the device, it will go from portrait to landscape. There are apps that use the screen in landscape mode. This is very analogous to, say, a Word document that you create in portrait would be the standard quickly down the page. Landscape would have the page turned a quarter turn to the right, so you'd be going across the long way. There are some games that require you to turn your screen to landscape, but I don't want it just going on landscape without me really being aware of it. So I have my screen locked down. The iPad mini actually has a switch on the right that you can use to lock the screen down. The phone does not have that, and it's a really nice feature because when I first got my mini, I was scared to death. I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to get this screen locked the way I want it?
Location tracking on. Bluetooth connected.
Okay, and I have Bluetooth connected because I'm using my speaker, so obviously Bluetooth is connected.
Music folder. Five apps. Utilities. Line apps folder. Seven apps.
Okay, so I have
music folder.
The first folder, and these are organized in a grid, okay? Think of like little squares in rows on the screen, kind of like a waffle. I remember when I first learned to use the computer and somebody said the screen looks kind of like a waffle with different things and different little squares. This is kind of the same thing. I can double tap anywhere on the screen. I can tap anywhere on the screen. I'm going to do that now.
Contacts.
Okay, and I landed on contacts. So if I hold my finger above contacts, I double tap.
Contacts. All contacts.
Okay, I opened my contacts. I can scroll down through the contacts by letter by using my finger vertically down the right-hand side of my screen.
All. Contacts.
Well.
Contact index. Adjusted. All contacts. Contact index. Search field.
Okay, and I have a search field where I can type in, you know, say I have close to 100 contacts in here. So if I don't want to go through the whole thing, I can type in a name and it'll come up with, you know, the contacts that are close to that name.
Share contact. button.
I can share the contact. This is really cool because my sister called me the other day and she said, I need this person's phone number. I went into my contacts. I selected the one I wanted. I hit share. I typed in the email where I wanted it to go, and it was sent to her immediately. And all the information that I have on that contact went to her. So say address, phone number, email, whatever it was, she got it. And it calls a contact card. The iPad uses the analogy of like a business card. But she got all the information that I had with just a couple of keystrokes, or finger strokes, as it were.
Are they VCF share contact.
Files? Sorry?
Are they VCF
files? I'm sorry. I don't know what the file extension would be. I could use Siri. I don't use Siri a lot, and it's mainly, I think, just me. I wanted to learn to do it with my hands, to use my hands, to do the things that I thank you. To use my hands. Siri is wonderful, and again, we don't have the internet, so I don't know that I can really show you Siri. Okay, I don't know if I'm connected. I don't have data, so I didn't know. I don't know if
dismiss app switcher.
My iPad Mini does not have data. When I bought it, I was already paying for data on my phone, and I chose not to buy another device that needed to be paid for. I figured most of the time when I wanted to use things, I could use Wi-Fi at home. You have be really careful about understanding what you're paying for. Wi-Fi versus 3G, it's all very confusing. And you need to be very clear about what it is you're buying. My sister-in-law and I share a data plan through Verizon. And a lot of the companies are getting smarter about you don't have to pay $30 for each person to get separate data. I mean, you can, but we share 2 gig, which isn't very much, and we almost never go over. Because we're just both real careful, and we do anything like updates. Your email isn't going to use a lot of data. You know, if you're out and you're getting email, but updates, and it'll say, this update is more than 50 meg. You must use Wi-Fi. You know, it'll tell you. Your updates are going to use up data really fast. Some apps, does anybody here use XM on the iPhone? Okay, I tried it. Number one, it's not very accessible. And number two, it uses huge amounts of data. And you can do almost the same thing with Pandora. If you really want to listen to different genres of music, you can type them into Pandora. And Pandora can be free. You can buy Pandora and it doesn't have ads. But if you're willing to put up with some ads, Pandora can be free. And I like Pandora. Pandora's kind of fun. Because if I've heard a new artist, I might want to go in and say, hey, are there other people that sound like this? Because I really like this.
Settings.
Sorry? Yeah, iHeartRadio's good. TuneIn Radio's very good. Some of you use that. Django? Yeah, I'm not familiar with Django.
Dismiss app switcher.
You could do it on data, but I wouldn't recommend it unless you have unlimited data because it's going to go pretty fast. You can listen on iBlink Radio. Probably a lot of you know this. You can listen to things like ACB Radio. You can listen to who? Does everybody know about Blindy TV? It's fairly new. It's called Blindy TV. It's actually they're running 5 channels of described audio, and I don't know who's doing it. And their server's been down for a week, so it's not working right at the moment. But if you go into community radio under iBlink, you will find Blindy TV. It's pretty cool. Is there what?
Visual?
Yes, there's audio. It's DVS basically.
But is there video?
No.
No, it's just audio.
There's no video. It's just audio. They show movies. They have a sci-fi channel. They have a channel called Brain that's kind of like Discovery and that kind of thing. They have an Etc., which is kind of everything. They have comedy and they have drama. It's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. So just go in there into blindness community radio, and look for Blindy TV. It is free. Anything on iBlink is free. They put stuff up there and iBlink is a project of Saratech. Just so you know, the SAMNet people, that's their deal.
Settings.
You kind of have to play with this because there's settings for everything. You can really customize your iDevice.
Dismiss app switcher.
Oh, let's see.
Myron Schuster.
Okay.
Contacts.
Like I said, I've mentioned several apps. I'd like to take questions if people have questions. Sorry? Do you want... Are you recording, or do you need a... Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about. I'm happy to answer questions, but I don't want to, and I'm having a little trouble hearing some people.
Did the wireless mic disappear, or do we have it? I'll be glad to run it if we can find it.
I'm coming.
Oh, good.
I think you mentioned you can do this. This is Nancy. Can you download music onto your phone? Like, could you stream your Victor stream? I would think you could.
No. I have not used iTunes to transfer music. I have bought music on iTunes, and the App Store is very accessible. I don't know how many of you use the App Store, but I've had no problem. Only problem I had at first was getting my password to enter correctly. But once I got comfortable using the keyboard on the phone, I was okay. The problem is, Nancy, if you're going to put music on your iDevice, on your iOS device from your stream, you have to run it through iTunes on your computer, and iTunes is not terribly accessible. I'm hoping it's going to get better, but it's not great. And, well, it'd be nice. They've done so much other nice stuff. You would think that they could fix iTunes.
Well, they haven't.
But you need sighted assistance. I hate to use those words. Okay. I think sighted assistance might be helpful. Let me say that. It's more work than I want to go through. I just buy... A lot of times I find the things I want to buy are cheaper on iTunes anyway. Yes.
If I may interrupt you for a second, this is Louis. May I answer that question?
Sure.
Okay. Just to give you an idea, what Andrea is telling you is correct. iTunes can be a hassle. However, it is doable. There are various ways to transfer music to your iPhone. I have to live with music wherever I go. Okay? I have a doctor's prescription for music. Okay? That's how bad it is, all right? Now, having said that, it is not easy. But once you learn how to synchronize your music library with your computer, I have transferred MP3s and I have transferred CMA files to the iPhone, okay? It is not something that is real straightforward. Unfortunately, the powers that be at Apple forgot that they have this thing called universal access. So their interface is real poor. So it is not easy. However, you can still listen to music. You can still upload music to it. And I'll let Andrea continue. And if any of you want to learn how to do that, what's his name? Dave from Australia. No, not Jonathan Moses. Dave... I can't think of his name. Anyway, you'll find him on iBlink Radio. He did several podcasts on how to do all that. And he explained it better than I did. I like his podcasts.
I apologize for saying it's not doable. I have not learned to do it. Louis is more, I think, technically inclined on some of this stuff than I am. I've found it's just easier to buy the music that I want on through the App Store because a lot of times it's cheaper. I'm sure it can be done, and I spoke in error. Do we have other questions?
Yes. Is this working?
We'll take one more brief question.
Andrea, yeah, I have the first question will take one sentence to answer, and the second question. Anyway, the first question is, when did Anna update the NBP document? Because I got it about a year ago.
It's within the last couple months.
Okay.
It's brand new, so you need to, yeah.
Okay, and then the other question is, if I cannot look at the screen, what really is the difference between like an iPad mini and an iPod Touch? What do I get with one that I don't?
The iPad mini is quite a bit larger than the Touch. It is much more responsive than the Touch, okay? It's faster. The memory, I think, is about the same. But the Touch you can put in your pocket. The iPad mini does not go in your pocket. The iPad mini is about the size of a medium-sized hardback book. So it's bigger. Anna Dresner's book just came out. The other thing I want to mention really quick is the iOS products do have Zoom, which is a feature that will enlarge the screen for people who have low vision. They also have a variety of features for people with limited hand use that you may or may not be aware of, because most of us don't need those, but they are there if you can adjust the gestures and things like that. So those things are available.
Are we still on questions or no?
No.
There are more in the end.
Okay, I want to thank you all for allowing me to be here today and speak to you. I will be around. I will stay. If any of you want to talk to me after the presentation, you want to hold the iPad mini, I have it. I have my iPhone 5 with me. You can see the speaker. I'll show you the keyboard. I have an iPod Touch, but it's at home. But I do have these other things with me if you want to see them. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you so much. Can anybody hear me okay? Okay, yeah, good making sure. Okay. Thank you, Andrea. Excuse me. It looked like somebody in the back. Okay. Thank you, Andrea, again for your informative on iOS devices. It's very interesting. The next person on the program is someone in Fresno, California. He is an Android user. He used Android for many years since version 2.2.1. And he is an access technology instructor who teaches PC, iOS X, OS X and iOS and Android. So please give a warm welcome to Tom Randall.
Thank you, Twan. Let's see, make sure I got everything okay. Yeah. Got my phone, got my coffee. I don't care if it's a zombie apocalypse and the walkers are coming. I need my coffee. Okay. Twan rightly said, I run a little bit of everything, but I prefer Android on my phones, and I've been running Android for a few years now. Excuse me. I'll start with a little bit of history about me. I'm also totally blind. I have retinopathy of prematurity, or as guys in my age group call it, RLF. And I've been active in the computer field since about 1983. I started working with the first talking Apples, the first Apple II Pluses. As old J.D.D. Doran here will remember well, said he and I grew up together, and we used to go out to Cabrillo College and play with the Apples. Anyway, got my first smartphone. First smartphone I had was a little Motorola Q, and I liked that little phone, and it kind of gave me a taste of what smartphones were like. But my Moto Q started showing signs of senility, of cybernetic senility. And so I kind of had to decide whether I was going to go, you know, with iPhone, which I'd played with and I thought was cool. A buddy of mine at work had an iPhone. Or if I wanted to check out this, at the time, it was this very cutting edge thing, you know, from Google called Android. And so, you know, I said, you know, I'm kind of a tech guy. You know, I like to play with things. And that's what people have told me. They're like, well, you know, if you like to play with things more, you know, you should go with Android. So that's what I did. And never been sorry. My first Android phone was an LG Ally, and that was a pretty good phone for the time. And I ran it for, you know, a couple, 2 or 3 years. And that one had version 2.2.1, which I believe is called Froyo. And then it upgraded to what they call Gingerbread, which is 2.3. Google, for some weird reason, they use snack foods to itemize their versions. I'm like, come on, you know, why can't you use like different kinds of beers or something? let's get to version Guinness. You know, that's what I want. So, but finally, I started having trouble with my Ally. It started, you know, running out of memory and, you know, things like that. So then I upgraded to the Motorola Droid 4, which is the phone I currently have. I love this phone. And it's not the newest or latest and greatest, but it's, you know, it's a rock-solid phone. I've not had a lick of trouble with it. Now, what I'm going to talk about is just a few things that a lot of people that I, you know, that when I'm teaching them, they and when I'm talking about these things, they get confused. First thing is, what is Android? Android is the operating system that is put out by Google. Some people, they think, oh, you know, Android, they think it's some kind of hardware. They think it's some kind of weird, you know, little robot thing that you're gonna buy. But no, Android is just the operating system. It's basically it's the programming that makes the hardware run. And you can run Android on anything. I mean, they run it on phones, they run it on tablets, they run it on, I mean, you can even run it on a netbook or a PC. There is a way to do that. And it runs now, what I think is exciting, I don't know a lot about this, so I'm not going to talk much about it, but they run it in televisions and set-top boxes. It's called Google TV. And like iOS, Android has inbuilt accessibility. Sort now, of. Yes?
Sort of.
Well, yes, I know you've had issues. Yeah. Yeah. That's my friend Sheila. But so what you can do, what that means is that you don't have to spend $300, like an iOS device, it means you don't have to spend $300 on a screen reader like for your phone like we used to have to do. But what's exciting about the set-top boxes is, you know, that if you get this accessibility going, and there are people that are doing this, we can finally get at least most of our money's worth out of our dish network or our cable, or when we're paying full price for these things, and you can use about 10% of it, you know, the way it is now. So I think these set-top boxes are very exciting. But back to phones. So that is what Android is. And I'm talking about phones just because that's what I've run and that's what I know about. Louis here has got the Chromebook, which is another, that's kind of another Android device, isn't it? That runs Android, doesn't it?
No, it's its own.
No, that's Chrome OS. That's Chrome OS. Yeah, okay, yeah. But that is from Google also. But, okay, well, I'm talking about phones because that's what I run and that's what I know about. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the issue with phones that you have to think about with Android phones is there are many manufacturers and many phones. Now, this is good and it's bad. It's good because you have a lot more choices. I mean, I can go to the Verizon store. I can say, okay, show me every Android phone you have. And, you know, and I can look at, you know, 15 or 20 phones. I'm just throwing that number out there. That may or may not be, you know, accurate, but the point is I can look at a lot of different phones and I'll say, okay, I like this one, I don't like that one. And some things that I would tell you to look for in a phone. you basically want to get as good a processor and as good of, you know, as much storage memory as you can afford. And you also, you want to get as good a camera as you can afford. And the reason for that is that there are a lot of apps, as Andrea pointed out, you know, like for iOS, that are a lot of them are coming out on Android as well, such as, you know, money readers and image recognizers and, you know, things like that. So we actually do want a decent camera. It actually is important. And the last thing that you are going to want to think about, at least, you know, my opinion on Android phones, is you have the choice of whether to get a phone with an integrated keyboard or not. Like my Droid 4 has a slide-out keyboard. And you use that, you can use the on-screen keyboard, you know, like in iOS, you can use that for, you know, for typing and texting and whatnot. But me, I'm sorry, I'm kind of old school. I like a real keyboard. I'm always going to like a real keyboard better. I can use the other ones, but I like the real keyboard better. And, okay, so now not all of the Android phones are coming with keyboards now. They are starting to offer fewer of them. But the good news is what you can do, there are some really nice little Bluetooth keyboards out there, and they're not really that expensive that you can get, and you just pair it up with your phone, and there you go. You've got your real keyboard when you want it, and you've got your, you know, your touch screen when, you know, when you don't need the keyboard. So those are the main things that you want to look at as far as a phone. And of course, you want to look at things like, you know, they'll tell you like the battery life, you know, how long it'll last in standby and talk time, and, you know, all that stuff. Okay. And you can ask me questions about any of this stuff at the end. Next, I'll talk about some of the things that you need to do when you get your Android phone. And, you know, yes, you probably will need sighted assistance one time to turn accessibility on. With the later versions of Android from Ice Cream Sandwich, they're with those damn desserts again. And Jelly Bean, there is supposed to be a way for a blind person to turn accessibility on. I have never done it just because, quite frankly, I'm lazy and have gotten sighted assistance. It takes them 10 seconds to turn the stuff on. It'll take me 20 minutes to screw with it. I have better things to do with my time. So you need to turn on your screen reader. Now there's actually a couple of different screen readers that you can use for Android. The official one from Google is called TalkBack, and that one, it comes in most phones. If it doesn't, all they have to do is go to what's called the Play Store, which is basically Google's app store, and download it. Again, it takes, you know, 10 seconds, and it comes up, and it's happy, and you're happy, and everything's great. So you have to turn. You have to make sure TalkBack is installed. You have to turn it on. The new TalkBack will activate something called Explore by Touch, which is similar to what Andrea was demonstrating on the iOS devices, because, of course, we need to be able to interact with these touch screens. And the Explore by Touch is how you do it. And now, just as a side note, when I first started with Android 2.2.1, there was none of this Explore by Touch, and there were actually parts of the screen, like if you got like into a security screen, where the keyboard interface did not work. And so what you had to do is you had to like memorize where the OK button was, and you had to be able to tap that. And no, it was on the screen, and you. Yeah, there you go. And you basically got one chance to tap it, and if you tap the wrong button, it would do something else. So I got pretty good at memorizing where that OK button was, but we don't have to do that anymore. The Explore by Touch actually works quite well. There are not as many gestures yet with TalkBack as with iOS, but you know, frankly, there's the common ones. You know, you can scroll through lists. When you move over text, it reads it. When you move over buttons, it reads it. And if you need to change like pages on your home screen, you can do that. Oh, and that brings up another thing. With Android, you can and you should pick what home screen you want. Remember I said Android is very customizable. That's one of its strong points. And the default home screen that you tend to get with a lot of these phones like the Samsung or Motorola, and then of course your cell provider tends to screw with them even more. And again, this is because Android is open source. And if you guys know what open source means, that means anybody can screw with this that wants to. You know, and by anybody, I mean the manufacturers, the cell phone providers. You know, they can screw with this all they want before they give you the phone. And the problem with them doing this is that a lot of times these cell phone providers and even the manufacturers, they don't know anything about the accessibility, and they will break the accessibility, particularly on the home screens. And I recommend that you install a home screen called Apex Launcher. That's what I use. It tends to be the most stable on most phones. Again, you know, you're dealing with different manufacturers and different phones, so you just your mileage may vary. You know, you kind of, again, Android is for people that want to try things. Now, so that's another thing you want to do is you need to get your default your good home screen. Like I said, I'd recommend Apex Launcher, because all the things that we want are accessible. You can put icons on your home screen. You can take icons off your home screen. And it's the same thing as what Andrea was talking about. It's like a grid. It's a grid of icons. And, you know, so yeah, you can add things. You can remove things. You can make folders. You can do all those things. Okay. Now I'll just talk briefly about some of the apps that I use. I use, you know, of course, I use there's a native Gmail app because Android is through Google, of course, so they're going to have a Gmail app. Yes, it is. It's very accessible. And then there is an email app. I don't know why Google does this. They have a Gmail app to read Gmail and an email app to read your other email. It's kind of goofy. Now, if you don't like that, though, you just get another email program. I know people are using something called Aquamail, and then there's another one called Canine Mail that people are using. The guide dog one. And it is K-9 mail. And people are using that one. I mean, personally, I'm able to use the Gmail one well enough, and I don't have my Comcast set up on there. I'm on a couple high-volume email lists. I don't want to get 500 emails a day on my phone. I don't like using my phone. I love my phone, but I don't like using it that much. I still prefer to read, you know, that much email on my Mac or my PC. So that's, you know, so you got mail covered. I play with Twitter. I recently started playing with something that I swore you would have to put a gun to my head and threaten to pull the trigger before I get into, and that's Foursquare, which is kind of a goofy little social networking app. I don't play with Facebook on my phone just because, you know, quite frankly, as with a lot of things, Facebook, the accessibility is kind of iffy whether you're talking about the phone or anything else, and I just frankly don't have the patience for it. Now, I do have, I have iBlink Radio on my phone. I have TuneIn Radio on my phone. I have Pandora on my phone. So see, they're releasing all these things, you know, for all the platforms, and that's what's great is we have choice, and that's the bottom line. Let's see, and of course, you can use GPS on your phone. If I don't need anything too complicated, I can get turn by turn directions from Google Maps, or if I want more, I use an app called Walkie Talkie.
I love it.
Yeah, and let's see. And if I want to use voice input, there are tons of Siri clones out there for Android. if you want to do things like, looking for the nearest Citibank or something. I use one called Edwin. Oh, Edwin, oh, where's the nearest Citibank? sounds like an English butler or something. And it actually works pretty well. But as to voice input, now the really cool thing about Android is I can use voice input to do speech to text into any text box. That actually is part of Android. And believe it or not, it actually works fairly well. Now, like any speech to text, if a jet airplane's flying over, if you're on a bus and the transmission's about to fall out, it isn't going to work real well. I'm sorry. It just isn't. And people just need to know when to use this speech to text and when not to. And I really get annoyed with these people that they're riding down the street on a bus and they're writing an email with Android or Siri and they send out 2 pages of gibberish to an email list and they don't check it, they don't proof it. So please proof this stuff if you're going to use it, because it's great when it works, it's terrible when it doesn't. So that's speech to text, so I can do that too. Let me think about any other apps. Oh, there is a money identifier called Darwin Wallet. I use that. I find that with these phones, quite frankly, I spent $100 on an iBill because with these phones, it's too much work. You have to hold the bill a certain distance. The lighting has to be just right, and I just get annoyed with it. I'm not going to stand there for 30 seconds trying to figure out what a bill is. I can whip my iBill out, you stick it in there, boop, five, and you're done. It was worth $100. So, but you can do it. If you're in a pinch, like right now, the AAA in my iBill's dead. So if I need to identify a bill, I've got Darwin Wallet and it does work. So let me think. Of course, you can also do, it goes without saying, you can pair with Bluetooth speakers or, keyboards if you need to, or, anything like that with your Android device. And I'm just trying to think of anything I haven't covered. Pardon? I do not have, people are doing it. There is something called Brailleback. I do not have a Braille interface. I do not have a Braille display. I am never going to have a Braille display. So I don't really know. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, I should say. Yeah. There's several you can get. If you want something real nice and easy, I use this program called Easy Folder Player. It's basically, and that is the nice thing about Android. I will say, I have to say this, and is basically what I do. I go into my MP3 folders, or I plug my phone into my computer. Comes up as a drive. I go into my MP3 folders, copy my albums, throw it onto my phone, bada boom, bada bing, it's there. it's done with, and I can play it with whatever music app I want.
No crappy interface.
So that is one thing I like, and that is one advantage. So yeah, Easy Folder Player. There's another one called Just Playlists. And that one is nice because it will handle M3U files. And what's even cooler is it will do them whether they are local music on your phone or whether they are streams. You can use M3Us for streams. It will work. Now, as Andrea rightly said, you need to be very careful of your data. Streaming will suck up your data like nobody's business.
So,
will
you create an M3U on the phone?
There are ways. There are ways. I don't do it that way, but yes, you could. I think Winamp will save. I also have Winamp on my phone, and I will say that the Winamp accessibility is not perfect. There are some unlabeled buttons that you have to memorize and things like that. But it is usable, and I'm not sure if WinAmp will create M3Us or not. I'd use it for that. But, you know, any M3Us that you have, you know, from your PC, again, you just copy them over to your phone and they're there. So thanks for that question, Sheila. That's a good question. I can't really think of anything else, so I guess I'll open it up for questions. Somebody got a mic yet?
Because
I can't hear you.
I've got it.
Hi, I'm type 2 diabetic, and I have a meter, but a lot of meters are the insurance companies screw around with you. Is there an app where you can actually take your blood sugar? That sounds kind of stupid, but I don't know. I've heard something about that. I don't know. Just general information.
No, there's nothing to apologize for. It's hard to hear up here with when you're back there. You want to know if there's an app that will read blood sugar? Not that I am aware of. Not that I am aware of. You would need additional hardware to do that as well. You'd need some kind of like Bluetooth-enabled meter, and I don't know that such an animal exists. I mean, it may. Thank you for that. That's a good, interesting question.
Are there any more questions?
Any other questions? Oh, that's a good point. You can also use your phone as a digital sound recorder. It is possible to do that. I use a free app called AnRecorder.
It's great.
And it works very well. For instance, like if you're in a pinch, if you're in like a lecture or something, you can record it, or even, you know, something as simple, you know, if you need to, you know, put down a grocery list or something. Okay, Sheila needs the mic.
Sheila Gunn Cushman, what I wanted to tell you about AnRecorder is there is no limit to the length of the wave that you can record, and you can set it for some different parameters. You can buy it, but there is a free version, and the free version will allow you to you record the thing, and it names it. But it puts it on your SD card. One thing that you need to know about Androids is you have to have an SD card, pretty much.
And that you can have one. That's the other point. I didn't mention that. Thank you. With virtually any Android phone, you get your internal storage. You know, your 8 gigs or 16 gigs or whatever you get. But then they also give you an SD card slot. So you shove a 16 or a 32 or a 64 gig, you know, SD card in there, and there you go. You've got more storage. So thank you for reminding me of that, Sheila.
Okay, we'll take one more question.
Hello.
Hey. Android offers something called haptic feedback, and what that means is that when you do something, the phone will do like short vibration pulses to let you know that something has happened, and so that is part of the accessibility, and it is very useful, so that way you know that whatever you did has taken. Yeah, it's good comment there. Okay, and any last questions?
I have one right here. One sec.
Can you do all those things with a MyTouch phone? Can you do all those things with a MyTouch phone?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Yeah, can you do all those things with a MyTouch 4?
Is it an Android phone?
Yes.
Then yes, you should be able to, provided it has TalkBack installed. I don't know what version of Android it is. That's the other thing that will... and by the way, you can find out what version of Android is on a phone by going into Settings and About Phone. Okay, if it's Gingerbread, you can do most of those things. The only thing is you will not have Explore by Touch, because that My Touch, it must be an older phone. Okay, yeah.
Okay,
I wanted to thank you all for letting me speak, and I want to thank Tuan for giving me this opportunity. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tom, for your wonderful presentation.
Well, and I will be around afterward as well for a while if people want
yeah,
to see
yeah, the, you have the to, yeah, if you have more questions, all three speakers will be around.
Catch up with me after.
Yeah. Next is someone we know very well.
Uh-oh.
Is
just say he's trying to get it on the
computer.
Trouble on
wheels. He's very interesting. When I got the bio from him, when he was 8 years old, he was fixing old radio. And then he sold them, and then he put in a quilt to get more old junk. And he got his master's degree in assistive technology and human services from California State University in Northridge. He is currently an independent consultant in an area of assistive technology and acceptability compliance for different companies. For example, Verizon and Southern California Gas Company. He is also an advanced assistive technology integration consultant trainer. So please welcome this gentleman, the president of the East Los Angeles chapter, chairman of the CGB Technology Committee, Luis Herrera.
Well, thank you. I was wondering who you were talking about there for a second. Boy. Somebody's got some credentials, I tell you. Even when people read my bio on the publication, they said, I didn't know you built your first computer in 1997. I said, nope. Actually, it was July 1977. There used to be a company called Heathkit. And I've always been a technology junkie. Actually, I still have a hero in my garage. It's interesting. Most kids would get in trouble for having their dirty socks and things under their bed. I got in trouble for having transistors, vacuum tubes, and other stuff. So, you know, I'm one of those strange characters, you might say. But to give you a little background about myself, I am totally blind. I was born with normal eyesight at the age of 3.5. I started losing my eyesight and lost most of it. And around the age of 11, I had a gradual return of eyesight, gradual temporary return. Because when I turned 17, it all started fading away again. So I never had 20/20 sight, but I had enough sight to be dangerous. So, I was in the quote-unquote resource program in junior high and high school. In junior high, they kicked me out of it because I wasn't handicapped enough. I didn't hit enough walls, I guess. So anyway, went to high school. In 10th grade, I was shipped off to the university. So, you know, I was one of those kids that was too impatient and challenged teachers on things. So to keep me busy and keep me out of trouble, they pushed me on to a higher level of learning. Well, that's fine. That was fine. Got interested in technology, not by choice, but by an indirect challenge. Somebody made a comment when I was with a buddy of mine in the computer lab. And the professor that was teaching the course there was very much against somebody blind being there. What is he going to do? Well, blind people can never do anything with computers. Well, he found out the hard way that that's not the case, because for the next 3 semesters, I signed up for classes that he taught, even though I didn't need them, just to torture him. To this date, well, he and I had, after he tested me himself to see if I really was doing the material, if I really knew what I was talking about, he decided to give me my exams and give me my finals. Once he realized that, this stuff is fun, it's easy, it's a no-brainer. And so just to irritate him, I said, it's so simple that even a blind person can do it. We can see it, and we're blind, see? Long story short, he and I became good friends, and to this day, we're friends. So over 30 years, over 35 years, I'm still good friends. So fast forward to 1977, I got my ham radio license, got interested in computers, bought this thing called a Heathkit 1203 computer. S100 bus, CPM system. But when you got a box, you got a box of components. I'm not talking plug-in cards. I'm talking chips, wires, resistors, capacitors. That's right. And so you had to kind of know what the hell you were doing and put it all together. Just about that same time, I got a device called the Opticon. And that Opticon I own to this day. Have repaired it on several occasions. At one point, I had an optical cable issue, so that I couldn't fix, so I had to take it to my buddies at Aerospace to fix it for me. And to this day, it still works. So I used that to get some of the readings off some of the packages and know what I was supposed to do and put it together, put my computer together. Except that I felt so frustrated, it felt like I failed because it wouldn't work. And I met a guy at a doctor's office who ended up becoming my boss several years later. But we talked about computers and radios. He came over and looked at my computer. There was only one little problem. A soldering joint didn't take. So because of that, it wouldn't work. And then he couldn't believe that a blind guy put it together. So it was great. Had the computer for many years, ended up giving it away. So I went to college, became an engineer, went to work in the aerospace industry. In 2002, I sustained an injury to my shoulder, and my left side had to be rebuilt. And ultimately, I was retired from the aerospace industry. Then I now consult with various companies and also consult with the state Department of Rehab, not as a vendorized person, but through a vendor to do specialized training and also work accommodation compliance. So I stay busy. I also do web accessibility recommendations for compliance with various standards and regulations. But we're here to talk about iDevices and iTechnologies. And it's good to be here, by the way. It makes me feel young again. But, you know, those days are long gone. So anyway, what do I do now? What do I use? Well, I work with everything. When I worked in the aerospace industry, my primary strength was in hardware. I could analyze problems and I can collaborate with people on various product issues. Didn't have a problem with it. Found it to be a great challenge. It was great. So now I am doing some hardware, but primarily software. Software in terms of assistive technology software and assistive technology software with off-the-shelf applications. I use Apple, I use Windows, and I also use Android products. And I also, most recently, I got a real cool thing. I became part of the accessibility team at Google with their Chromebook and Chrome OS. And so I am finding this device to be very accessible, and they're very, very quickly updating this device to make it very blind friendly. You don't have to worry about a screen reader. You don't have to worry about magnification. It's all built in, similar to what Apple did with their universal access, except that this one is a web OS. When you plug in or when you turn on the computer, it goes directly into that, into its OS. If you have Wi-Fi and it's, if it's already paired with it, it'll automatically connect you to the Google Cloud and synchronize all your stuff. If you don't have web access, you can still run the apps because they're on your computer. You can store the stuff in your SSD drive, and when you get to a Wi-Fi connection, it'll automatically synchronize everything. So that's pretty cool. Works great. Now, what about iOS devices? What can you do? How can they help you as you go through school? Well, the good thing about Apple's approach and Apple's commitment is that a lot of these devices are set up, and Apple has reached out to the assistive technology community to make sure that they can support some of the products we use. How many of you have a Braille node? Yes, all right. How many of you have a Bluetooth Braille display? Okay, I do too. I have the Focus and I have the Brilliant. I've also used the, oh, I must tell you this story. One of my colleagues that I met at Apple, Mike Shabanek, who was the individual heading up Tiger Accessibility, go way back when we got started, was doing a demonstration of Tiger and of the first iOS 3S or 3GS phone. And we had a refresher Braille. He had forgotten he gave it to me. So while he's doing stuff on his computer first, he would open up a window and I would close it. And he thought there was something wrong with his computer. He forgot that I had the Bluetooth device paired with his computer and I was wreaking havoc. I did the same thing with the iPhone, and I was not even in the room with him when I did it. So it was fun to turn the tables and trick a sighted person. So that was good. But those of you that have the Braille Sense, you can still use it with your device, okay? I'm very dissatisfied with the way that Apple has handled the QWERTY products, the voice note, the voice note and the Sense QWERTY. There's really a very poor level of support for that. And the reason why that is a sore subject with me is because a good number of today's blind people, especially the young men and women coming back from our service, the military service, are blind and are using these devices. They don't know Braille, but they can't use their devices with their iPhones, iPads, or iTouch. So it creates a problem. But for us, we can use all these devices. I have my iPhone here, and it is paired up with the handy-dandy Focus 40 Blue. I have the original one because I don't like the texture or the feel of the new Focus. It's personal preference. there's a great deal of need and functionality that people can benefit from. But as I said, it's a case of personal preference. For me, this device does everything that I want. And it's worth it to me. So, you know, if you find that the Focus 14 or the Focus 40 is good, then nobody should tell you that you should use this, that, or the other, because it's going to be what works for you. Okay? So that's always a good thing. Now, what applications do I use? I use everything that any other person uses. I use Pages. I use all the apps that come on the with the iPhone, and I also like to use. Let me see. Am I? Oh, yes, I am. How come I don't have voice? Speech on. Oh, that's a good reason why I turned it off. Just to give you an idea. Let's see.
App Store, 13 iTunes.
No.
Page 2 of 5. Utilities folder. 4 apps. Radio stations folder. 6 apps. 5-0 Radio Free. Adobe Reader. Code Reader. Color ID. Drinks Free. Dropbox. Evernote. iNote. Find iPhone. Google. iBooks. Shopper. New. RMaker. New. Walkie Talkie. New. OMOD. Page 3 of 5. Travel folder. 4 apps. Items View. Pages. Planner. Podcasts. 3 new items. Radeon. Recognizer. Skype. 1 new item. Smart Record. Speed Test. Vocal. YouTube. And Gadget. Flow Free. Camcard. Page Scanner Light.
So I have a variety. I have 5 pages of apps. There's a lot of different things. We can talk about the apps off, but I want to cover as much as I can to give you an idea how these iDevices can help you. I also do a lot of research. Because in order for me to do my job, when I'm working with a new client and I need to research their needs, I am on the road a lot. Amtrak and I become good friends. And so is Greyhound, as much as I hate it, but some Greyhounds now, especially the new blue buses, have Wi-Fi. But how many blind people know that the bus you're on is blue? So I always tell the people, don't tell me if it's a new, don't tell me what color it is. Tell me if it's a new bus or an old bus. Then I know. But anyway, I use Braille. I pair my phone with Jambox. If I need to hear something and I don't want to hear that boring speaker. And I do whatever I need to do. So I also carry spare batteries. I have a Halo, which is 55 amp hours. I also have another one that's 12,000 amp hours, which is very good backup because, as we all know, the iPhone 5 stinks. As far as battery life goes. So I use that with the iPad. Do I own an iPad? No. I've always had the latest and greatest iPad due to contracts that I work with. They provide me with a tool when I finish, even though I've been encouraged to keep it. My philosophy and my policy has always been to never keep anything because I don't want anybody to request a favorable rating about their product if just because they gave me something. That's not going to happen. So I don't. I prefer to be ethical about it and return their products back to them. So that's the way that goes. Now, in terms of school stuff, how many of you do online learning? Have you guys heard of a thing called Moodle? Moodle can be a nuisance. They just upgraded it, and actually, if you go to there's a help option. In there, you can find all the hotkeys for using Moodle. Now, here's the thing. I've been talking about the iPhone and the iPad and the iTouch because I do pretty much the same thing with all of them. The iTouch is pretty cool because I can throw it in my shirt pocket. And I use that primarily for music. I carry music wherever I go. As I said earlier, I have a doctor's prescription for that. I also use the Mac extensively. And I found that Moodle was much easier to work with using the Mac. I also found that there's another program called Illuminate, which is similar to Blackboard. And it also ties into Blackboard indirectly also. And I've been in a collaborative classroom using my Mac more successfully than I have with a PC. Can it be done with a PC? Yes, it can. Do I do it? Do I prefer? It's a matter of personal preference. The thing is that it's doable. And I use it with my Braille display because the good thing about the Mac and the iDevices, once I pair them with my Focus, if I don't turn them all on at once, I can select which one my Focus will be paired to. And when I close the screen or power down whatever device, I can just wake the other device up and the Focus will reconnect automatically. It's worked out real well. Now, the question was asked early, can you use your keyboard with multiple devices? Theoretically, no. However, for those of you that want to get a keyboard you can use with more than one device and not have to repair every time, there's a thing. Logitech makes the K811 Bluetooth keyboard. It's got three channels. Each channel can be dedicated to one device or another, so that when you want to use, let's say, your iPhone, that could be function key 1, your iPad can be function key 2, and your Mac can be function key number 3. So you can switch between them and don't have to power down anything. It works great. I don't own one. I played with it. I know several people who have them due to my recommendation, and they love it. So there is a keyboard out there. It is not a foldable keyboard, but it's not that big either. And the keys have good feedback, tactile feedback. So when you press, you do get the sense that it is working. So there's that. Now, it's standard size key, correct? Mm-hmm. And, excuse me? The product is called, the question was, what is the name of the product? The product is, it's a Logitech Bluetooth keyboard, model number K811. Okay. How much? You can buy it at Best Buy in Northridge right now for $79. Okay. Amazon last time had it for $89. So it's a good price. In terms of other platforms and other devices, I'm also an Android platform user. I have a Nexus 7 platform. I had an Android phone when Motorola first came out with their first Android phone. And back then, TalkBack, or what used to be TalkBack, or there's attempt to accessibility, was very archaic. But if you practice, you could get good enough to use it. I know several people who stuck with it. I gave it to my nephew and played with something else. So, that darn phone still works to this day, so it's got to be good. So anyway, why did I bring up the tablet? Simply because you have an alternative now. You have other devices. Is it as good as the iPad? No. Can it be that good? Perhaps. But at this point, Google is committed to do what they can to give us the same functionality that you have in iOS devices. I use TalkBack. I also like Ivona. It's a speech engine that is very cool. And again, I also play music on my handy dandy tablet. It's something that,
11:54 a.m.
Let's see if we can hear.
Unlocked. Let me see. Do you think home?
Yeah.
Home. Playlists.
This is the tablet.
Home. Play. Next.
Let's see. Is it?
Play. Next.
Oh.
Let's see.
Previous. Pause.
Okay.
Playlists. Recent.
Yes.
Don't Bring Me Down. Electric Light Orchestra. Home. Double tap to select. Playlists. Recent.
The sound schemes, they are added part of TalkBack. And I also have BrailleBack on my tablet. So I can, you heard that noise that he just made? That just told me it disconnected with my Bluetooth device, which is my Focus. And so what I did is I have one of those covers that when you close it magnetically, it turns off the screen. Same thing I had for my iPad. And so when I close it, I don't have to worry about turning it off or nothing. It just locks it for me, which is good. Anyway, I use Braille on it. I can do pretty much everything that I want. I haven't found a satisfying word processor with my tablet. I have a program called File Creator, which is pretty good. But I'm looking for something similar to Pages or similar to equivalent of what I can do with Microsoft Word. Reason being is because the industry wants us to use Microsoft products, so we have to be able to do that. So I, at this point, I don't have that. But the thing is,
I want to give you a warning. About 5 minutes, we have
good.
To
we're almost done anyway. Okay.
Time for question and order.
Yes. Well, hang on a second. Let me just finish, and then you'll take your question. So all these devices that I'm telling you about, you can use with Braille. You can use with regular keyboards. On the iPad and the Android, I have used both a regular keyboard and a Braille display simultaneously. So if you're collaborating with somebody and you need somebody sighted to assist you, a Braille keyboard isn't going to do it much good, but a regular print keyboard will. And some people don't like to use a touchscreen keyboard, so for them it is good to use that. And here again, you can collaborate with your colleagues and be part of a team where if you're using something like a Braille Note, not that I have something against the Braille Note or the Braille Sense, I have nothing against them because I do own one of those devices. But here again, now we are in an environment where you have an all-inclusive society, where you can be part of a team and not feel like you're being left out because of your disability or non-compatibility with your devices. Having said that, I am ready to answer questions.
Okay, this is Andrea, just with a quick comment. I'm sorry, Louie, I thought you were finished. The guy's name is David Woodbridge. I had to look it up.
That was his name, David Woodbridge.
Radio, and iBlink Radio is wonderful because the one thing I didn't mention real quick is AppleVis. If you don't know about AppleVis, they have podcasts up there. People do reviews. I don't think this mic is on. I'm trying to yell. Okay, I guess, yeah, okay. They do reviews on podcast reviews of apps. They're wonderful because they'll tell you how usable or user-friendly it is. So, yeah, David Woodbridge.
Okay, good. We got that. Any other questions?
Yeah, the mic, I think.
Somebody back there? Uh-huh. Okay. Somebody, Steven. Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. Another, if you want to know about using iTunes, there are two podcasts that Jonathan Mosen did on FS Cast. That's off the Freedom Scientific's webpage. Jonathan Mosen did a two-part tutorial on iTunes. Wonderful. On the for Windows.
Oh, great. Excellent. And as I said, you have access to a lot of information on the internet, and Andrea just mentioned David Woodbridge. He does a lot of podcasts and different apps and different applications of your i devices. But as far as there's plenty of Android. There's that Android show is excellent because they really get in depth into Android functionality and accessibility. So that's always there for you. So you now have choices, whereas before It was only adaptive equipment. Now we can use the same thing as other sighted people and be part of a solution. Any other questions? Going once? Uh-oh. It's not, there's no such thing as a stupid question, but ask it. Okay, you're entitled to.
Being barely competent in technology, what would be the best way to go about educating myself in regard to, well, in particular with iOS devices, but you know, not limited to that.
Okay. The best way to approach the learning curve or the familiarity with it is twofold. Number one, talk to your friends, find out what they have, what they use it for, and see if that parallels what your ultimate goal is. Then look into places like the National Braille Press, see if they have any of the Braille publications on that particular product or device. Other ways is to other means of obtaining that information is to talk to others. The best bit of information is to hear from somebody who's using it.
You really need to get your hands on the stuff.
And that's the thing. Get the key thing also, and most important is personal comfort. I can tell you what works for me, but at the end of the day, you're the one that has to use it on your own, and I'm not going to be there 100% of the time or 90% of the time or even 10% of the time. And you want to be comfortable using it. Get your hands on it. Learn the basics. Explore it. We all start with the basics, and we work our way up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will be the last one before we call for the adjourn.
Okay. Sheila Gunn Cushman again. In the Bay Area, the Lighthouse for the Blind has a pretty decent technology section. And unfortunately, I don't know a name right off, but you know that the front staff's pretty good about finding who you need. And I bet that the Braille Institute probably has something similar and or can give you an idea where you can find places to get your hands on a technology piece of something and look at it. And don't forget your chapters, guys. We're everywhere. We're everywhere. We can help you.
Yep, that's true, and that's a very important thing. That's why I say word of mouth. Talk to people who use it. Find out what they like or don't like about it. And then before you make up your mind, don't do it based on what they say. Do it based on what you experience with it. Try it out. If you want to know about the Apple devices, every Apple store has a requirement that their Genius Bar or somebody in that Apple store know how to enable VoiceOver so you can sit there and practice. And if you need to go to one of those one-hour training sessions, they're free. And you can sit there and learn the basics and determine, okay, this may not be JAWS, this may not be Window Eyes, this may not be NVDA, but it is something that's consistent.
That's the first thing you realize,
but it's not. Exactly. It requires a different skill set, but the point is this. If you want to do the legwork to overcome that learning curve, it is much worth it. The good thing about it is that you're now using an all-inclusive, off-the-shelf product that will not require you to buy an SMA or have to remember a new set of keystrokes when they change the version of it. Because since Apple has come out with VoiceOver and through all the changes from Tiger on up through Mountain Lion, all they've done is added more features, but all the other commands are consistent. There's consistency and uniformity that makes it easier to learn.
Okay, so thank you, Luis, for your...
Thank you. And...
For your Tuan, warm presentation.
Tuan, before I go, thank you all for having me. I enjoy it. I plan to, in the fall, have something on this Chromebook and have somebody from Google if I can make it happen. If not, I'll do the demonstration of it. I have the device here. It's smaller than my MacBook Air, and it's a very unique product, and I think it's going to be Here again, another alternative for us to choose from.
So, ladies and gentlemen, so please get a warm hand for all three speakers. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the conclusion of the program. We hope you all enjoy and learn something new. And we are adjourned, and the third general session will be convened at 1:30. Thank you.